As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi everybody, this is the Ruck from the Times and the Sunday Times, and it's the last Ruck of the season. I hope you've loved your rugby season in whatever capacity you were involved, but last Ruck today, and we'll be shortly announcing when we restart for the huge part of the year. That's the World Cup warm-up games and Rugby World Cup itself. So traditionally, we have huge figures for those, and we'll be hoping for that again. And keep in touch, and we'll release all the restart dates, etc., everything you need to know. Thanks once again for joining us. I'm Stephen Jones. I'm joined today by two excellent ruckers, Stuart Barnes, who is coming to us from his gothic pile in Bath, and the editor of Rugby World, Alan Dimmock. And
who could be described as a pile, but for in a very different way.
Yes, he's a former props who would be a pile. And Dim's fair play mate, I think there's a real buzz about Rugby World. You've given it a new slant and some excellent articles. And I'm not being paid to say that. I sincerely mean it. So make sure you keep up with Rugby World as well as The Ruck.
New issue out today, by the way. Good plug there. Thank you, Steve.
No problem at all. I'm working well. Stuart, I left you all on your own to cover the Premiership final. I presume it was a disaster for you?
Steve, I just didn't know where to turn or what to write without you on my right-hand side. It was awful. Please come back.
I know you didn't mean that for one second. I know you did a great job and a very good report. Coming up on today's podcast, we're going to look back at that Premiership final. It's not been the greatest season for the Premiership in many ways, but the play, the standard of play has maintained itself, and that was an excellent game in my opinion, watching it afterwards. We'll also touch on the URC final. Munster, again, we can call the mighty Munster, beat the Stormers in Cape Town in front of a huge crowd. We'll talk about that as well. Also, we'll ask where the Barbarians go from here. They have decent crowds for their games. There was a sort of festival game, let's call it that, on Sunday at Twickenham against a World 15. But where do they go after that? Also, we'll name our god or goddess of the week. Stuart, you were effusive in the paper on Sunday. You clearly enjoyed it. Saracens back on top. An occasion and a match worthy of a final?
I think so, yeah. Saracens have been by far the best team in England all season. They've been the most entertaining. They've been the most industrious. They've been the most intelligent. It's a triumph for Mark McCall getting this team back together again in the last 2 years. And they thoroughly deserved it. And I must say, I thought in the first half in particular, Owen Farrell played better than I've ever seen him play. He was absolutely superb. Not quite the same in the second half, but that was a spectacular performance from him and a very organised, efficient one from Saracens. And whereas perhaps Sale were too keen to go to the air and slow the game down, Saracens maintained their style that they played all season. They were entertaining and thoroughly worthy winners.
Al, first of all for you, did it feel like a proper final?
The sunburn on my forehead would tell me that it did, because it was a lovely sunny day. But yeah, it was a match and an atmosphere befitting a final. We could talk about crowd numbers, and actually crowds for the Premiership final haven't been the highest they've been for a wee while yet. 61,000 still very good, and they made their voices heard. We were just remarking off air about the number of neutrals that were in attendance, because it just sort of felt like an event rather than just a rivalry between two sides. But the game was brilliant, and there was enough prophesizing before the game that Saracens would walk it, and absolutely not, because just the pendulum swinging in that game. It looked like Saracens were in control, then Sale came charging back, or should I say Manu Tuilagi came charging back, and with Tom Curry on the wing for a large part of the game. They just seemed to really relish that, and then the quality came through. And I think Stuart is right to highlight Owen Farrell. It was the one big takeaway that I had from that game, was just the quality that Owen Farrell showed. And I think what demonstrated it best was there was apart from his timing of pass, which was exceptional, a couple of times when he sent Max Malins through holes, just the timing of the pass was superb. But there was a moment in the second half, about 70 minutes, 68 minutes or so, whenever the yellow card went to Hislop to send him off, Owen Farrell screaming at his players, "Let's effing go!" And then he started almost laughing to himself. I rewind it back later in the day to watch it, and it looked, and I just thought, you maniac, you actually enjoy, you're loving every second of this. It's mad. You should be in hell right now, but you're loving it. And it's just the quality of play. It was brilliant.
Stuart, there was a time I felt you were wavering at the start of the season between the delights or the talents of George Ford and Owen Farrell, and but also Marcus Smith. He did enjoy a little of the Barnes' journalistic largesse at the start of the season.
And last season... And I still think Marcus Smith is a very fine player, and I still think Marcus Smith has a big role to play in 2023 for England. I think what we've seen now, the quality of Farrell's play, he's controlled the game, and you do need complete control. And if he can give that to England, although he hasn't done it international level as he has at club level, that has to be remembered. But the way he's playing, captain, he has to start, he has to control the team. But, you know, you've got to think, if England are 8 points down with 10 minutes to go, who can turn the match around? And I still say Marcus Smith more than anyone else. It may be that Steve Borthwick thinks George Ford is his number two fly half, but that doesn't mean that Smith shouldn't be the bench fly half. You know, if Farrell gets injured, Borthwick may want to go Ford, but then it would be Smith on the bench. And if Farrell is starting, it is still Smith on the bench. So I'm not deserting him. I was disappointed with Marcus C. Smith's season. I don't think he played as well as he has done for the last year or two. As for Farrell, he has developed. And one thing I'd say, you can analyse, and I've spent hours looking at the good and the bad of Farrell. But in the end, I think if you're a fly half, and you're a decision maker, you have to relax. And I can remember a million years ago when I was tight and I was wound up, you didn't play as well as when you just felt in control of the situation. And if you can smile and if you can really relax, that's a massive difference. Now, no one, Farrell's greatest fans, cannot rewrite history and tell me that Owen Farrell was a relaxed character for the last 10 years. He hasn't been. He's scrunched his shoulders up. He's looked for hits. He's narrowed down in his vision because he gets so angry. That's all gone now. And, you know, who would have believed that Brendan McCullum, a New Zealand cricket coach, comes to our shores, tells us, for God's sake, top-class sportsman, relax, enjoy it. It's a privilege. Get on with it. It's changed everything. Farrell is a better player, not because of the timing of his pass, so it's good, it always has been, not because of kick-in for touch or tactical, because he's got a smile on his face instead of a snarl, and that's changed everything.
Very good point.
The best kicking fly half performance of the weekend anyway wasn't him. It was Theo Dan. Yeah. Who pulled off a tight spiral 50-22 out of nowhere. Replacement hooker Theo Dan.
We'll come up to Theo Dan in a second, but Al, Sale, Stuart's using the word relaxed about Saracens. Sale weren't relaxed. They're a big, heavy team. They played wonderfully well. What would you say about them? It's easy to say, well, they almost did it, they'll be back next year, but could they have done better this weekend? And also, you were just talking about the timing of replacements. Their replacements seem to go off at an exact time?
Well, timing is an interesting theme all round for this match, because, you know, I was very impressed with Sale. You know, I must admit that I thought that Saracens would have too much for them for the whole game, but they it was interesting. The Gus Warr was landing box kicks in contestable areas. Alex Good maybe didn't enjoy the finest of afternoons under the ball because they were so contestable. But I think it was a little element of experience that told in the end, because I remember speaking to someone before the match and going, well, look at the benches though. You wouldn't say that's a vintage Saracens bench, but what they have is this level of cohesion and understanding. So the analysis that goes on pitch for Saracens probably sets them apart from most other people. So there was a moment where I think you'll remember Duncan Taylor's charge down deep in Sale's territory, and what had happened is that Alex Good identified some space and he hit some grass with the ball, because Sale's incredibly talented, exciting young back three were great, and a lot of things they did really well, but letting a ball hit grass is the kind of thing where, you know, it just knocks your timing a little bit here, and then something goes wrong somewhere else. And Saracens, although they should get more credit for playing a more exciting, faster paced game than they have for years, still there's a lot of calculation that goes in behind, and it's those little wins, it's winning those little kicking battles which makes the difference for them. Sale will learn from that, and as I said, those guys are really young. It feels like on this podcast we've said quite a few times that Sale have been on this journey, and when Alex Sanderson first came in there was a lot of work to do, there was a lot of clearing of the decks, and it took a couple seasons to find their feet. They've obviously certainly found their feet now they've got to take it that next step further, and a lot of people are talking about the Saracens blueprint. Obviously Alex Sanderson was a big part of what Saracens had done over the year. You'd fully expect them to take it a step forward next season.
Sure. Stuart, you mentioned Mark McCall briefly. Mark is, you could say, diametrically opposite to Eddie Jones in the terms of the volubility and the load mouthing and pre-match war of nerves or whatever you call it. Mark is so laid back or so quiet that you even have to crane forward to listen to him whisper when he does come up and say things.
But not during the game, Steve. He's the loudest man in history.
He's lost his voice. That's why he can't say anything afterwards. But it's a great effort. I mean, Mark was responsible for, obviously, you know, resetting the team. He had to put together a championship team to win the championship, which couldn't have all his top players in. Then he had to put together a team that would compete in the Premiership again. And then again this year, he's the winner. So it really is off the field in terms of shuffling the players. It's an epic achievement, but on the field, he is sharp as a needle.
Yeah, I think he took them on from Brendan Fenter. They were a kick and chase team with a great spirit, and that's what he inherited. And he turned them into quite a cerebral team who never stopped caring for each other, and that's very important. He has that feel for the spirit of the game. That's vital. The other thing he has, I've written about, I think last week or so, when other coaches are looking to what's going down the line in 2 months, he's looking to what's going down the line in 4 years. And he's developed young players. He's developed game plan. This way they're playing now, partly I think he was aware that he didn't have the bulk of a forward power to just play that game. You know, he doesn't play entertaining rugby because he thinks, oh, let's run the ball. Won't that be fun? First and foremost, he wants to win. And I'd say 2 years ago, when all the financial stuff went off, he was aware that he was going to lose power in certain areas. So he, by being depowered, he had to find a way to change their game. He didn't quite do it last year and was very disappointed. This year, from day one, they have addressed that issue. They have played this offloading, flat to the gain line, attacking rugby from the start, and they did it not to try and be a lovely looking team who would win over fans. They're not doing that, but to be a team who, when the final came, would have a game plan that they could win. To me, he is he's up there with my old mentor Jack Rowell as a visionary. He's up there with Dean Richards and Gatland as motivators. He really is right at the top of his career.
That's high praise, and I know what you thought of Jack, because I thought exactly the same of the great man. I'll just think I've got two Theos for you. just in terms of where Saracens are now going. We've got Theo Dan, who brought off that absolutely extraordinary kick, the 50-22. And you're thinking, who's the best replacement for Jamie George? The way Dan played, you're thinking, well, is Jamie George going to be in there next year? There's another Theo as well, Theo McFarland, who, let's not forget, began the season explosively and is almost now fit to play for Samoa and Saracens next year. So it doesn't look like the Saracens era is about to end with these lads.
I mean, certainly some like Theo Dan coming in and sort of blowing the doors off after a stint this season. And, you know, it was very much a sense of, geez, where did this come from? And Theo McFarland is an exceptional talent. I'd say that Theo McFarland is a triumph of taking a punt on someone that you have a gut feeling about.
And, yeah, exactly.
You know, there was advisement that this guy has an incredible skill set. We all know the stories about his basketball past and all of that kind of thing. And he really grew through last season and was exceptional again at the start of this one. One of the things, Stuart mentioned the Saracens of old, where after everything that had happened, they had to slim down and lose some power. I think one of the great lessons from that weekend, I mentioned the appearance of the strength of the bench as well, is that it's the cohesion players in between. You don't need someone with 75 South African caps to win a Premiership title coming off the bench. And, you know, it makes you think, like, you know, there was no need to stockpile all that talent when you can play with this level of control with the players that you've got. Some guys who were brought in because you were facing a championship season and have rid the wave and have come through a championship there. So I think there's a real lesson in that. And just to spin it again onto Sale, because I do believe that they have the ability to maintain their level at the top here and really push Saracens if they want to, is that they'll learn from that. So they'll build that level of cohesion. I think after the game, Alex Sanderson said that every season you need to become 10-15% better just to stand still. Everyone will need to do a huge amount of improvement over the off season. Obviously, having a World Cup in the middle of it completely changes the face of everything. So the start of next season will be fascinating. But Sale, you know, the young guys that were there and tasted defeat in this Premiership final, they'll learn from that, because Exeter Chiefs did exactly the same. And they're coming to, Exeter Chiefs are coming to, in the current issue of Rugby World, we've called it Exeter 3.0, looking at the new young talent that they've cut, that's coming through, because they are doing it what feels like the right way in the current financial climate of bring through these young guys, give them game time, and yes, they'll make errors, everyone will learn from it and will improve better. You don't need to bring in these guys with huge caps and, let's be honest, a huge wage bill.
So that's very, very interesting and quite right. I can ask you both the same question now, guys, on behalf of, in terms of the whole Premiership. As we talk, and this could happen, change at any minute, London Irish are still to, the new owners are still to declare their hand and still to part with as much as 50 pence to take over the club. It still seems many people are saying that London Irish will not be able to do it. Let's pray that they can. But next year in the Premiership, there is still the salary cap reduction. There'll be 1.5 million less money available this season and next season, and it's well over another season before they go back up to 6.5 million. So next year, possibly the European challenge won't be that much greater than it was this year. But also, as we said yesterday in the Sunday Times, they're very, very much going for a 10-club league. That is definitely what they want, what the current teams want, and what the hierarchy wants. So, Al, let's come to you first. 10 clubs, is that enough to grab the nation?
It's going to have to be, but you'd hope that those are 10 clubs that can stay financially solvent. Because that's the issue. You can't say, I'd like to have a 12-team league, so let's whack in people there that might not be able to go the course. Now, what you could do is, this comes down to the whole promotion relegation discussion as well, is you could have that, and you could have a bit of a relax of the standards of, say, right, well, let's let Jersey and Ealing come up. What will that do to scorelines? Are we happy to wear that? Is that going to sell the league in the same way that you want? Or would you rather have 10 teams that you hope can cut their cloth accordingly? There's a whole load of elements with that, because which one sells the league better? I'm a firm believer that you need competitive balance, and you need to have stops and make weights to ensure that teams can remain competitive. But you've got to face that this is the stark reality of where we are. We could end this season with three teams going bust, falling out of the league. I mean, certainly the way we're going about things, isn't sustainable. And we need to be talking more and more. I'm sure if Mark, I can hear Mark Evans on my shoulder. I don't know if he'd be the little devil or a little angel, but I can hear him talking about governance and all that kind of thing. But geez, listen, it's the as good as the rugby on the pitch has been. Bloody hell, it's been tough going off it.
You can't lose three teams, Stuart. A 10-team league, and do we have to be patient till the salary cap goes up? So before one of the English teams starts winning in Europe again.
Oh, you know, we don't like to say it, but there are players who are outside the salary cap, and you get average internationals who are on £800,000, clubs that are getting average crowds of £7,000.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then you say, oh, it's all the RFU, it's all governments. The clubs have made a complete horlicks of it, and they're continuing to make a horlicks of it. A 10-team league without relegation will, within a year or two, bore the pants off everyone. If rugby wants to develop as a professional game, it has to draw people from outside the old network. And whilst the old farts thing is always aimed only at Twickenham, yet the clubs, in their own interest, don't want newcomers in. We wouldn't have... I've said this a million times, but the panacea that's being put in front of us now wouldn't allow for an Exeter. Exeter galvanised the game in England for quite a long time. You need that. We need someone in, I don't know, another team. We, you know, Newcastle and Sale is not enough in the North. We need options. We need Northampton, Bath, Gloucester, Exeter. None of them are big city towns. You know, they do well because football isn't a massive sport there. Rugby is relying on sort of small town traditions, and that doesn't take the game forward at all. What it does do, it might very well make it financially viable for the owners, but this game, the people who own Bath and Gloucester and Leicester, they own them for the moment. They do not own them for history. Bath is bigger than Bruce Craig, and these people have a duty to maintain the clubs, and it's not by just trying to hang on and make some profit in the next 4 or 5 years because they don't have a vision for something else.
Stuart,
the vision for the game is one that has a promotion and relegation. It's a vision where the RFU fund teams who are not Premiership, teams like Jersey at the moment, and enable them in 5 or 6 years to have a system where we're starting to look a little bit like the French game, where there is this amazing excitement, not just about at the top, but at the bottom.
There are professional leagues in the world in different sports that do this as well. They have independent governance that takes central decision-making out of the hands of the owners. Sometimes owners are owned by a conglomeration of fans. What's best for the game is a decision that they all support. The larger chunk of the pie can go to the team that needs it most, so that everyone's more competitive. When I say that I believe in competitive balance, that's what I'm talking about. I think we're talking about the same thing here, and that so there has to be a vision for what's for the good of the game, rather than just, oh God, if we grab this deal now from this wealthy benefactor.
For the good of 10 clubs. That's what we're talking about, really.
I think you're... What Al's saying is, Stuart, I think he probably agrees with you, and I agree with you about promotion.
But when you're losing three
huge clubs, it is really a three. I mean, one is enough to lose in a year, but to lose three is sickening.
But also, you know, what we're talking about is potentially replacing the owners of one club who won't put their hands in the pocket is someone that we can't even nail down where the money's coming from, whether there's going to be enough, who the names, what dispatches are we hearing from these people? What noises are they wanting to give what's meant to be their fans crickets? So it's, you can't just kick the can a little bit further down the road, which feels like that's potentially where we are.
I do think as well, I mean, listening to, talking to various people last week, there is definitely some sort of slide in the direction of teams building up, as did Exeter. I know for a fact that Jersey have got some huge backers, and I really mean huge backers, who would put money in and for a stadium, etc., if they got in the Premiership. Well, you know, if we're going to really, as you say, Stuart, if we're going to hour extend things, well, if Jersey can prove that they are a Premiership team in terms of facilities, potential crowd and finance, well, then, for me, they don't need to win the Championship to go up into the Premiership. It's as simple as that. As long as they're not taking the place of a team that's equipped like them.
I still feel that the promotion relegation thing is the long-term answer, because it develops a much greater fan base, and that's how you develop the sport. On Sunday, I gave up on the mighty Arsenal. Man City were just too strong for us. But I was glued to see whether Everton, a club who have been in the Premier League for the last 51 years, could hang on. Now, rugby is just chucking that away, and they can't afford to chuck that away.
No, it
loses out. I spoke to Steve Borthwick a few weeks ago at a Bath game. Without relegation, so many matches have no intensity. They're pointless. It doesn't help the international team. It doesn't help the fan. It doesn't help anyone at all. But everything right now is being geared towards the short-term benefits for 10 clubs. And that is a long-term failure of thinking. And the RFU have got to be stronger. They've got to say, you know, we are going to fund Bedford, Doncaster. The names don't matter at the moment, but it's 10 years down the line. But in this country, we seem, you know, in this country where everything's about dividends at the end of the year, we're scared to death of having an idea that actually is going to take some time and will be a little bit painful along the way. But we've got to, are we in it or not? That's the question.
Well spoken, lads. We're now going to move on to the URC final, where Munster had one of their greatest days. Guys, not so long ago this season, when Munster was struggling in Europe, we wondered whether it was the end of the great Munster march. Well, it wasn't, because they are URC champions. They beat the Stormers in Cape Town. That's the Stormers on their own home ground, whatever it is, 8,000 miles away from home, at the end of a grueling season. Al, one of Munster's greatest days, was it a shock? And where does that put the competition when an Irish club, which is not very successful during the season, can go and take the title in the lair of the Stormers?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I was brought to mind the idea of the playoffs. I don't know about anyone else catching the dispatches from football's playoffs at Wembley this week. Always a fantastic occasion. And some of the teams coming through, it's about form. It's about coming through at the right time. Mm. And the way that Munster did this deserves a bit of recognition here, right? So Munster obviously hadn't won a major trophy for 12 years. Famous province, crying out for success, madly in love with its rugby, but not had anything to shout about. And they weren't great shakes for a large amount of the season. In fact, in April, I think they got a scalping off the Sharks. Like April. We're now in May, and they had this run through the playoffs where the last five games, they have played away from home. They haven't had a home game since round 16. They played round 17 and 18 away from home, quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals all away from home, and won it. And there's just something that's quite romantic about the idea of this team that's constantly on tour, growing in form, growing together as a team, going to the back door. Now, the pitch in Cape Town is uglier than Cinderella's sisters. It's an absolute shocker. But they went there abroad facing the defending champions who are playing at home, and they did a number. And it just deserves a hell of a shout out. The job that they've done this season, I didn't see it coming. I don't know many people that did, but you've got to say bravo to them.
Stuart, you used to be a massive fan of Munster, you and Miles in the old days. It was like listening to two people from the west coast of Ireland on commentary. Are your boys back?
Well, first of all, I can't go on and on and say I hope Saracens win the final in England because they were the best team, the most consistent, blah, 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 and not say that Munster, let's just remember, you know, remarkable their late season run, but they ain't the best team. That's quite clearly Leinster by a country mile. But Leinster fielded a second team because, understandably, they were plotting for La Rochelle. And Munster took their advantage. And yes, it was one of their great days because this is not one of their great teams. And when you're not a great team, it takes something else. And Graham Rowntree, he unlocked it. And he found it. Yeah, when I was reading that up to 5,000 people were bound for Cape Town, then all my old love, as you like to call it, for Munster, came flooding back. Because I don't know, is there any other team in Europe that could send that amount of support that far away? They are passionate. Rugby's not just about what happens on the pitch. Spectators have a vital role to play. The European Cup was, in the early years, the Munster fans played a predominant part, as much as just about anyone, except probably Toulouse on the pitch, for bringing that tournament to life.
I totally agree with that. Yeah.
And they've gone to Cape Town against the odds, substantially against the odds, and they've won that game. Alan's absolutely right. Not about Cinderella sisters, but the pitch. I think that played into their hands. But finals rugby is about working out how to win. And like I said earlier, Mark McCall didn't play the more attractive and quicker rugby than Sale because he thought the crowd would like it. He did it because it was their best way to win. And Munster unlocked the best way they could win this game. And that's a tremendous victory. It is one of their great ones. It's up there with those two Cardiff wins in Europe.
I have to say that I've always been, I'm afraid, very wary and suspicious of the URC because I just do not believe it can carry on in a sport teeming with commitments to just bridge the enormous gaps between these countries. It was slightly, you know, the league or the Celtic League, as it once was, has been struggling on to raise interest. And I think it was maybe a bold move. I still think that in 2 or 3 years' time, the URC is going to come to the end of the road because rugby is just too busy for it. And then, I mean, Leinster, when it come down to it, I think they gave their verdict on it that they would rather not win it if it increased their chances of winning in Europe. So I really think you cannot combine some random countries and call it some form of domestic league, Al.
Well, I'm going to push back on that because I'd like to see how it's going because I was sceptical when this, let's call it a project, first began. And then speaking to contacts in South Africa, I saw the level of enthusiasm and it's still going. And speaking to people in Ireland, now, maybe that's in the afterglow of a win for Munster, is people talking about how excited they've been and how it's great to see genuine rivalries to face off against Leinster and for them to not... Leinster were untouchable for large amounts of the season and they tripped up. And I've heard some people suggesting that Leinster should really pick their entire superstars and take them to Cape Town the next time they go there next season and try and lay a marker down and how things just can't clawed along the way that they've used to, and it's been a real shot in the arm. I've even heard some people suggesting that there's going to be increased investment in the league. Now, I don't know if that's true, but I'm hearing a lot of positive sounds from some places. Obviously, there are other areas where they're not so positive, and I think I'm looking across the Severn to see how people view it there. But I'm going to wait and see. I'm not going to declare that it's going to be dead in a couple seasons because I've really enjoyed a lot of what I've seen from reaction and seeing new superstars emerge. So I'm on a watching brief here.
I was just going to say, we haven't talked about climate crisis. It does exist. And you can't have a league where South Africans are bolted onto Europe. And great as it is that Munster are sending hordes over to the tip of Africa, to encourage this is a nonsense. Rugby babbles on about sustainability and you read all its promises online and yet when it comes to the crunch, they don't give a damn. And to have a league where you have got British, Irish and South African teams is to cock a snoot symbolically at something that is very important on this planet. And I think it can't survive that way.
Did you throw it that orange hand grenade on the Twickenham, by the way?
I tell you what, no, it wasn't. It was a doctor from Bristol, a sensible, serious man. And the venom that was coming from behind me, behind the press box, was some of the ugliest stuff I've ever heard in my life. Mm. The tone from certain areas at Twickenham, they should think twice about themselves. When you get a streaker on the pitch, everyone think it's funny. When you get someone trying to point out that the world's in a crisis, they want to hang them.
Okay.
I was distressed, really distressed by it.
By the reception to the demonstrators?
By the reception, exactly.
Okay. Well, we seem to have lost our early unanimity here because I see what Al's saying about the interest in South Africa, but to be fair, Al, it is the only thing they've got now. They've got nowhere else to play. Wales, Scotland, Italy, and is it so big? I don't know. It's definitely a point with global warming, etc., that more and more jets are up in the air now with rugby teams in it. But look, I have to say, I will say that we've got to give it another year and see what happens. It's just somehow ironic that all these years, these other clubs, the other nations have been trying to put a league together, and then the final takes place not in any of the nations sort of thing. So I'm happy to be keeping an open mind till it carries on. And Stuart noted the reception at, from some at Twickenham was not what you would have liked, and I don't think I would have been very happy that I'd been in my normal seat next to you either.
No, I must say, Steve, some, not all, but okay. A lot.
Okay. Next, everybody, we're going to talk about the Barbarians. Also, the end of the Premier 15s is coming to a climax, and we'll all choose our god or goddess.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Just briefly with the Barbarians, a much-loved club, hugely popular amongst vintners and draymen because they spend the whole week clearly drinking before the game. People still think it's a big honour, and they still get reasonable crowds. Are they still worthy of their position in rugby?
Well, I think a bit of inside baseball here is this match at the weekend, Barbarians versus World 15. Barbarians and World 15 are both looked after by the same people.
Yeah.
So it's very much an in-house production. I've been lucky enough to go on a tour behind the scenes with the Babas years ago to see how things work. And there's still a gloriously amateur element to a lot of it. And I think players really enjoy that. Obviously, players enjoy cutting loose in several senses. You might have seen Alan Wynne-Jones taking a shot at goal that he missed at the end of that game. It's seen as an honour, but it's also an opportunity to do things that you wouldn't normally do. And it's a bucket list thing for a lot of elite players. I like that. The club itself is still struggling, speaking to people, it's still struggling to modernise.
Yeah.
And there was a period in the early 2010s where there were serious questions about the future of it and whether it would go on. The pace of change has been quite slow there, but I know that the Barbarians would definitely benefit from being more than just a thing that we talk about a week before it happens and go, oh yeah, the Babas are playing.
Yeah.
There are options on how you get there, but I'd suggest that something needs to be done. If that's more glamorised, then it's just more rugby in the calendar, and then how the hell do you put that together? But at the moment, it's a nice novelty for players, and you'd be sad to see it go. But I think it needs something to bring it up to 2023 now.
Stuart?
I've got a lot of affection for the Barbarians. They were very good to me in my playing careers. They sent me to places like Hong Kong when we didn't have a clue about climate crisis, thanks to Barbarians. We had great times there. I agree totally with Al in that this is an intensely professional and serious age of rugby, and there's no harm now and again letting your hair down. I personally find a 90-point game anything but thrilling, but there we go. But, you know, Israel Folau, he's in many circles seen as rugby's bogeyman because of his pronouncements, which we all know about, on gay marriage. He comes back and he's selected to play in this game because it's not regarded as important and it's a welcome back. And he got booed a lot, but I watched him play again and I thought, my God, this bloke is outstanding. And I don't like his opinion, but I think he's got a right to it. And I think teams, matches like the Barbarians and the World 15 are opportunities to sort of bring people back in from the fold.
He does look a dangerous player. Let's just catch up with the Premier 15s then. It's been an unbelievable season for the women's team and also for the league. This week it's the last action of the regular season. Darlington Modon Park playing Sale, Gloucester Hartbury playing Exeter, Loughborough are playing Saracens, Wasps are playing Bristol. A bit of a sad day because it's the last time Wasps will appear in the league. They're not even involved as a club in any league next year, I don't think, even though they've been one of the greats. Wasps and Bristol and Worcester and Quins. The battle's on for the last four and also for the home games. And at the moment, it would seem that Gloucester Hartbury, who are just edging out ahead as the equivalent to Saracens in the women's game. So all the best to all the teams in their final games of the regular season. And let's hope that the semi-finals and the final are as good as the league has been all season. So it's now time for God or Goddess of the Week, the last awarding of deity for the season. We'll come to Al first. Al, God or Goddess, and they'll be reigning God or Goddess until the start of next season, officially.
Well, it's funny you say officially. There was a lot of praise for Piardi, the Italian referee who looked after the URC final, but I just wanted to give a shout-out to Luke Pearce, who looked after the Premiership final. Chest control aside, where the ball one pass rocketed off of his front in that game, I thought he was really good. I don't imagine there was a huge amount of complaints from lots of people. I looked after the game well, and you know, we talked about a fitting final for the end of the season. I thought it was a fitting referee performance as well, so I just wanted to give a nod to him.
Very good one, very good one. He was our guest at the Rugby Union Writers Club lunch last week and spoke extremely well. Barnsley.
We were chatting, you and I, with Wayne Barnes and Luke Pearce, and the pair of them said the one thing they hate more than anything is when they get in the way of a pass. That's awful. I watched that happen. I thought, oh, Luke. But I go along with Al. He had a fantastic game, but you can't give a referee a couple of gods of the week. That's wrong. So I have to find the Englishman in Limerick. From the depth of despair to a colossal triumph in Cape Town. Who would have thought Leicester prop Graham Rowntree is now a man of Munster and he is my God of the Week. The free bird flies again.
That's a very fair one as well. I'm afraid I'm not going to be going too far this week, especially as I didn't see the game, although I did watch it later on. Mark McCall, maybe the quietest man in the world apart from when the game is on. He's also calculating, cool, keeps up with things, knows things, and for what he did when Saracens were on their backsides and to stay with them till they got back on to silverware has been brilliant. So Mark McCall is my man. And that puts an end to a whole season of The Ruck. The God or Goddesses of the Week who could have been in contention are all you people out there, men, women, boys and girls, who followed us and who've come up to us and said whether they agreed or disagreed with what we said. We should also thank Alfie, our producer, who has been unbelievably patient with us, dropping in and out and being unavailable and not available, forgetting things, and especially with my total lack of IT nous, because he's had to be an IT advisor for hours every week.
I'd describe it as IT triage.
Triage, yeah. Waiting for me is like waiting for in the emergency at a hospital. Thank you, Alfie. We'll be back for the prelude to the World Cup and the World Cup itself. We look forward to bringing that to you. Please stay with us. Thanks a million, everyone, for listening to The Ruck.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.